In New Jersey, as well as the great world beyond. This is the Chief Leaders, Bob Henley, at Stuck Nation, because we surely are. This is WBI's Drive Time News Magazine. What's going on? It's your Monday morning back to work, back to school time here. And Kathy Davis is our audio engineer. Linda Perry is our executive producer. It's December 20th. The sunrise will be at 7:15 a.m. this morning. It's a crisp and clear 26 degrees in New York City. The week ahead, there's no snow or rain predicted. We should see the temperatures get into the high 40s up until Saturday, when warmer temperatures in the low 50s are likely to make it a wet, but not wet, white Christmas. This morning, we'll get an update on how the intense Omicron surge is affecting the essential work of FDNY EMS officers, from Vinnie Variali, president of DC 37-3621. We'll also speak with Dr. Ed Zerowesty, assistant professor of medicine at Johns Hopkins of Medicine and founding director of the Migrant Clinicians Network, about the New York farm workers. He will discuss their struggle to get overtime at 40 hours and how the COVID pandemic is impacting them and their families. We'll catch up with New York City public employee retired activists Stu Eber and Gloria Brandman about their battle with Mayor de Blasio over his rush plan to privatize their health care benefits. We're also going to have to raise money toward the WBI Tower Fund so we can help pay the $17,000 a month transmitter rent to keep this beacon of free speech radio and community engagement on the air. Please call 212-209-2950. Now the Pacific and Network News with Mary Sherman.
Welcome to 2021 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
To have a senator that isn't focusing on creating the kind of investments that will uplift the communities that he represents is something that we need to seriously address.
Minnesota Congresswoman Ilhan Omar and other Democrats blasted West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin after he dealt a massive blow to President Biden's Build Back Better Act. Citing concerns over inflation and rising debt, the conservative Democrat said he won't support the $1.7 trillion social and climate spending bill. The White House said Manchin's opposition is at odds with his recent negotiations with the president. The legislation needed the support of all 50 Democrats to pass the Senate, and Manchin was the only holdout.
Joe Manchin, I believe, will listen to the facts. The radical left could care less. They are on a mission to pass this monstrosity come hell or high water.
That's South Carolina Republican Lindsey Graham, who, along with other Republicans, praised Manchin's decision. Progressives still want the Senate to vote on the bill to put opponents on the record. Meanwhile, Vice President Kamala Harris sternly defended the administration during an interview when asked if Manchin or Biden is the real president.
It's Joe Biden, and don't start talking like a Republican about asking whether or not he's president.
Do you think Joe Manchin is a problem?
It's Joe Biden, and I'm vice president, and my name is Kamala Harris.
Harris argued that Republicans are consistently blocking progress. Democrats were pushing to pass Build Back Better to ensure the extension of the expanded child tax credit for another year. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi was asked last week about the possibility of a standalone bill that would extend the credit.
Of course, we could pass that in the House, Whether we could pass it in the Senate remains to be seen.
Nearly 9 in 10 children have benefited from the advance payments, which will now lapse. With Congress out until January 3rd, voting rights legislation is also on hold. But Democrats, including Georgia Senator Raphael Warnock, are again looking at ways to end the filibuster.
Voting rights are preservative of all other rights. They lay the ground for all of the other debates.
Democrats are calling for a federal voting rights law to counteract voting restrictions passed by GOP-controlled state legislatures. Former Senator Johnny Isaacson passed away at the age of 76. The Georgia Republican resigned in 2019, citing health concerns, and was battling Parkinson's disease. Isaacson was known for consensus building and called for bipartisanship in his farewell speech.
Whether you're black or white, Republican or Democrat, whatever it might be, find a way to find common ground.
Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren has tested positive for COVID-19. The 72-year-old is fully vaccinated and says she's experiencing only mild symptoms. And weeks after testing positive for COVID-19, Washington State Senator Doug Erickson died on Friday. The 52-year-old recently called Washington Governor Jay Inslee authoritarian for COVID restrictions. An official cause of death has not been released. I'm Mary Sherman for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
We're dealing with an unprecedented surge in COVID cases between Delta and the emerging Omicron variant from South Africa. At the end of the week, Madison Square Garden announced they were canceling the rest of the holiday season run of the Rockettes Christmas Spectacular at Radio City due to breakthrough cases. I think it's kind of ironic that we had to cancel the world's greatest chorus line because as a country refused to do anything at the same time, including wearing a mask. It was a string of Broadway show cancellations and the holiday gatherings, including Mayor de Blasio's Christmas party for the press corps, was also canceled. Yesterday in New Jersey, there were 6 confirmed COVID deaths, but a near record of over 6,500 new cases reported, and hospitalizations reached an 8th-month high. New York set records with close to 22,000 people testing positive for the virus 2 days in a row. We saw long lines, like you see outside, red state polling places at COVID testing sites. So far, it appears the latest surge is not producing a similar spike in hospitalizations, and the daily death toll remains in the tragic dozens, not in the stupendous thousands we saw last year. Time for a little Pete Seeger inspiration to still our resolve, and we'll be back with local 3621 President Vinnie Variali on the other side. So, anyway, I guess we do have Vinnie Variali on the line. This is the Chief Leader's Bob Henley. And you're listening to What's Going On here on WBI 99.5 FM. And to keep us on the air in this hour of labor news and so many other programs like Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash's Building Bridges and Democracy Now!, we need you to take some time to call 212-209-2950 and pledge whatever you can in the name of this show or any of the other shows you've come to rely on. I mean, just we heard now from King Downey is amazing. I'm pleased now to introduce Vinnie Variali, president of DC-37 Local 3621, which represents the FDNY EMS officers. Good morning, Vinnie.
Good morning, Bob. How are you?
Well, I guess, you know, I'm fortunate. I'm getting to work from home. Your members can't. Give us an update. Where are we in this situation? What is the experience of FDNY EMS officers now as we go through this third wave of this deadly virus?
Yeah, certainly. So, our members are out there stepping up again, doing a dangerous job, but proudly serving the people of the city of New York. From what we're seeing so far, we do see a slight uptick. Normally, this time of year, our call volume would be anywhere from 3,500 to 3,800 a day, but we're seeing it more around 4,000 to 4,300 a day. Which is far, is nowhere near what we saw during COVID, where we were at 7,000 or higher a day. So what we're noticing a lot of the really sick people who are going to the hospital are generally the unvaccinated people. Those who are vaccinated, they're getting sick, but it's not warranting an ambulance ride or a hospital ride. So I guess the message here is get vaccinated. So if you do get sick, it won't be as bad. So far that's what we have. We don't see like hospitals being overwhelmed at this point. Thank God. We don't see mass chaos that incurred the last time COVID had a serious surge. But this seems to be a more milder variant than the past.
Is there some concern that I still see incredibly essential workers like yourself scrambling for these at-home tests? And we see also these lines. My colleague Mara Gay from the New York Times has done a great job spotting this dysfunction, if you will. Is it disturbing that almost 2 years into this that we have this testing crunch? What does that say about the inability of the government at every level to learn from its miserable performance?
Yeah, well, we definitely see the lines for people getting tested. As I said, we see an uptick of people getting infected. We just don't see the serious illness or them getting so sick to go to a hospital yet, at least for the vaccinated. So you will see those lines for people getting tested because there is more sickness going out there. But you're right. It just does identify that, government has mismanaged this from the very beginning. They failed to prepare for the worst in the very beginning before COVID even happened. And they have bungled this thing throughout. Mayor de Blasio, a perfect example, has mismanaged many crises and emergencies through the whole time of this and doesn't seem to get a handle on it. Even just recently with the mandate, he, instead of negotiating something that could have worked for everybody and sitting down with the unions where we could have prepared for possible second outbreaks and third outbreaks and so on, he failed to do any of that and just imposed things that he thought would be the best thing to do. And once again, mismanaged this crisis we're dealing with now.
And that's interesting because one of the things that I repeat often, if I remember correctly, was back in August, the Municipal Labor Committee, the umbrella organization led by Harry Nespoli and Henry Garrido, executive director of DC-37, your parent union, begged to meet with the mayor to develop a universal plan to get cooperation and not coercion. And as it is now, we still have a situation where, because the mayor pitted the unions against each other, did not work in collaboration with them. We have, I must hear about this, there's a rampant issue of forged vaccination cards. Isn't this an issue?
It is. I mean, we haven't, we've seen some members or none of the EMS members, I want to add, have been found to be guilty of forged vaccination cards. However, there have been some other members in city and private industry who have forged vaccination cards. For whatever reason, they didn't want to get vaccinated. One other thing I wanted to add is even though we've seen what we've seen throughout this pandemic, the city of New York and the fire department still failed to properly prepare EMS for what we're seeing. We are severely understaffed. So hopefully this doesn't get as bad as it was the last time. And like I said, we're not seeing that right now. But if it does, we're going to be having a big problem because we are still severely understaffed. We are not well prepared. And I'm seeing things that the department's starting to rely more on private ambulance companies and so on to try to pick up the slack. And that's a problem because we know in the past, we've seen in history, I don't know how many times New York City residents, taxpayers have to get kicked around for, doing the same thing of relying on private industry, private ambulance companies to come in here and then disappear whenever they feel it's, convenient for them. And then leaving New York City in the lurch, and then once again depending on the services of FDNY EMS members. There's a lot of concern here. So far, it's been mild, but I wonder what is it going to take for the city to finally manage this properly and do what is necessary to correct the problems and staff up EMS properly, treating it as a true emergency service.
Well, I'll tell you one of the challenges here has been, I know you guys got a contract, so there was a bump up, but we are still dealing with this, what I think is a gender and race-based pay discrepancy, which I always say it's like there's a plan, it's the essential service. And I've written a lot for the chief about a tragic column called Expiring Before Retiring, where career members are not able to retire and enjoy their benefits. They continue working and then end up succumbing to whether it be World Trade Center disease or any other of the things you face. one of the things when I interview the commanding officers, when someone like this has passed, is they point out, like in Queens, that around Elmhurst Hospital over the last 20 years, one of the preconditions of this is the closing of hospitals. Brother Varialli, could you tell me this connection, which you see on the street, of rolling back the basic public health infrastructure and how it resulted in this excessive death toll we're living with now?
Certainly, certainly. Yes, I've had conversations and we've done videos with Councilwoman Lynn Shulman on the effects of these hospital closings in Queens and what it does, the impact it has on communities and the city services. Obviously, when you close down a hospital, you're creating a longer distance for an ambulance to transport somebody to a hospital. And for example, in Rockaway, many times that hospital is not equipped to handle the influx of a surge of people getting sick. So the nearest hospital to go to is Jamaica. Every time an ambulance has to leave Rockaway to go away to Jamaica, it takes a long time to get that ambulance back into the neighborhood, which, again, does not provide enough service to the people of that area, which means you need more ambulances to cover those areas. And if we're already understaffed and don't have the staffing for that or the resources, that prevents a real problem for people who need those emergency services.
Especially when they don't have the underlying health coverage.
Other rural areas. Sorry.
No, I'm just going to say, one of the things you made a point to me, it blew me away. I don't know how many years ago, we've been talking a long time, Vinny. You mentioned that in the United States, there's a requirement for like a fire department, but we do not to this day talk about incredible, a standard EMS requirement for America. We, even with all the talk of Build Back Better, don't we need a federal commitment to EMS services for every zip code of this country?
Absolutely. And that's a good point. Yeah, we've been talking a long time about this. And there should be a national EMS agency governed by, you know, regulated or put standards out by the federal government. There is none. And EMS is not even looked at in some states as a vital service or essential service. Which is ridiculous, especially during the pandemic. We've seen how important having a good, well-staffed, funded EMS system is. And to not have one or even consider them to be an emergency service is just, it's astounding. It's amazing. How can this be? You know, now's the time for Build Back Better or any other, whatever you want to call, whatever bill they want to come out with, is to create a national EMS agency to overlook this pandemic that's still going on and any future possible pandemics, and to address the health problems throughout the country. EMS is part of that because we provide emergency assistance, and it's also a pre-hospital health element where we could provide vaccines and so forth and help with the population throughout the country.
Listen, Vinny, I want to thank you so much. How can people get in touch with you, and what can we do to support FDNY EMS?
Thank you. Yes, anybody who wants to support FDNY EMS can please reach out and donate to the EMS FDNY Help Fund. This fund has provided a lot of assistance to EMTs and paramedics throughout COVID, and we continue to do so. And if we're going to have this outbreak again, and it does get bad, the EMS FDNY Help Fund is going to be needed once again to provide more services and financial assistance to those members.
Thank you so much, Vinny, for all you do. We'll catch up with you, beginning next year. Take care. Stay safe.
Thank you, Bob. Thank you. Take care. Have a good day.
All right. And we'll be back with Dr. Ed Gerassi after this restorative break with Brother Seeger.
The song's known all around the world now.
There once was a union maid. She never was afraid of the greens and the gates and the company finks and the deputy sheriff that made the raid to the union hall when a meeting it was called. When the Legion boys come around, she always stood her ground.
So you can't scare me, I'm sticking to the union. I'm sticking to the union. I'm sticking to the union. Oh, you can't scare me, I'm sticking to the union. I'm sticking to the union.
Till
was great to hear from Vinnie Variali. I mean, it's just, I know Vinnie was dealing with COVID through this, and it's just incredible what they do. So when you see them out and about, please go to the trouble of being supportive. These people are paid nowhere near what they deserve. It's a crime. It's a scandal. The least we can do is show them the regard that they deserve. I am honored to be joined right now by Dr. Ed Zerowesty, TB medical consultant, PA Department of Health, assistant professor of medicine at Johns Hopkins School of Medicine, and founding medical director of the Migrant Clinicians Network. Good morning, doctor.
Good morning.
Listen, thanks so much for taking the time. First of all, give us a sense of your portfolio. I mean, I have just was trying to do some research on it. It's sprawling. What are your coordinates and what is your regional area of concern?
Well, I'm a family physician, and for 20 years I provided frontline family care, family practice in rural Pennsylvania. I now live in central New York, in Clinton, New York, and I'm still practicing public health in Pennsylvania, where I'm the medical consultant for the Pennsylvania Department of Health Tuberculosis Program, and I run 8 county TB clinics there. I'm still the founding medical director of the Migrant Clinicians Network, and so I'm still doing a lot of consulting on migrant farm worker issues.
Wow, and that's how I first came across you, which was on a great Zoom call related to this issue. You know, a lot of people were in labor were patting themselves on the back when Governor Cuomo made a big deal of signing the Watershed Farm Workers Labor Protection Act. And yet what I learned, and I knew a while, but I got some detail from the great call, and I want to give a shout out to NYCLU and RWDSU, the union, for inviting us, making reporters aware of this stuff. Let me get this right. So we had this big bill go through, and we thought that we were going to patch that racist discrepancy that existed going back to FDR to make a new deal. Unfortunately, had to cut a deal with the Joe Manchins of that area, the Dixiecrats, and exclude from all the important labor protections that have uplifted generations of Americans. Well, what they had to do was cut off farm workers and domestic help to keep the South happy. Now, is it correct that under that watershed bill we were so happy about, overtime only started at 60 hours, doctor?
Correct. And first of all, I do have to congratulate New York, because it's one of the few states that did pass a very comprehensive law, the Farmers Labor Fair Labor's Practice Act, which really gave farm workers almost all the same rights as other workers, including the right to form a union, unemployment insurance, and sick leave. But what it didn't do was allow for overtime if you worked over 40 hours a week, which other workers are allowed to have and since the 30s. And so this is unfortunate that they capped it at 60 hours. So we're really advocating to get rid of that final discrepancy that all workers are entitled to and provide it for farm workers also.
I guess there's also going to be some important hearings coming up. There's a wage board that is part of this. And I guess those of us who support and want to uplift farm workers need to be aware of it. Do you have the coordinates on that? Like, there's an opportunity, I guess, to express how people feel about this.
Correct. There was actually, you know, the wage board, many of us testified, a year ago or so, and the wage board was to make a decision by December 15th, but then they kicked the can down the road a little bit further, and now they're going to have more hearings in January of this year.
And so I guess the thing that I'm just kind of still stupefied by is that we were talking about hazard pay, which kind of got lost in the sauce during the pandemic. And yet now we're talking about just making sure that farm workers get the overtime, just basic overtime that was the law of the land for everybody else, primarily white folks, prior to the pandemic. Can you talk with me about what has been the impact on farm workers? We have seen a lot of reporting. There's a very important report put out by House Select Committee looking at what happened during the Trump administration, the terrible toll in meatpacking plants, close to 300 folks that process the nation's meat killed from the pandemic. In many cases, those food processing places and meat processing places became vectors for the disease with an impact for the whole community. What has been the switch to your other hat? What's been the impact of the pandemic on farm worker families that you're engaged with?
Yeah, and unfortunately, as you and I've discussed in the past, it's very hard to get national statistics for true migrant farm workers because migrant farm workers migrate, they move. And so it's very difficult to really get good statistical data. But we know that talking to our colleagues that the migrant farm workers, because they were essential workers, they had to go to work every day to pick the fruits and vegetables that these are the field workers I'm talking about. They need to go to the work every day to pick the fruits and vegetables that we all eat every day. Fortunately, a lot of that work was out of doors. And so that at work, oftentimes they weren't as at risk, but most of them traveled in large groups in vans and buses. And so they were at risk for that. So we do know that early on in the pandemic, there was a lot of illness and death in farm workers before we had the vaccine. Then we had to work very, very hard to get the vaccine and get access to the vaccine to the farm workers. And that took a really local and national effort to make sure that farm workers were, again, not excluded from this life-saving vaccine.
Now, one of the things I wanted to ask you about is one of the preconditions going into this is that America's population, we know, for 3 years running, we saw life expectancy decline. And so that it should have been, if in a country that was geared up to the well-being of the population, that should have been, a dashboard indicator, right? Can you talk about what's happened? I've talked to other public health professionals who talked about a kind of rolling back over decades of public health protections. When I review the scholarship around the response to the Spanish flu outbreak, the breakthroughs like school nurses, the idea of having a school nurse in each school, the essential understanding that health is in the community. We lost that, didn't we? I mean, I've done stories where we have circuit school nurses now where they travel to several schools. Can you talk about that degradation in terms of the robust nature of our public health system?
Yeah, there's no question. You know, as I said, I've always had one foot in each, in public health and also in the private sector and working with migrant farm workers in a family practice. And in the public health sector, there's no question that we've really decreased our infrastructure of public health. We don't have as many public health nurses on local areas at all that we did before. And COVID has really brought that to the forefront. We've really struggled to get people out there on the front lines doing the public health things that we need to do. And what this pandemic has shown us is that we have a real deficit of that workforce and that emphasis and how costly that is to the country. Because when we can't really attack this sort of enemy, the virus, with the workforce that we need, then many people die unnecessarily. And the information that gets out there is not necessarily good information. We really need those local people who are trusted conveyors of information to tell the public what they need to do. People used to trust their physicians. They used to trust their nurses when we told them that scientifically, this is what we need to do. This is how we want to protect ourselves, each individual, but also protect society. And so it's a real shame that infrastructure has been decimated as much as it has.
Well, Doctor, I guess if you could give us the coordinates, how can people support your important work?
Well, on our website, www.migrantclinician.org, that gives a lot of good information, and you can donate to that, to our organization through that website would be the best way.
Listen, I want to thank you and also see if we can get you to come back in the new year. I'd like to at least once a month just make sure that we check in to get the picture from the rest of the state. I do think we have a problem, as you know, with what's happened with corporate news. We don't have local reporters like we used to. So it's so important that we have like this committee of correspondents to get the information about what's happening in the rest of the state. Thank you so much for taking the time, and have a great holiday.
Yeah. And I want to thank you for bringing this subject up to your listening audience. So thank you very much.
Well, of course, that is Dr. Zero Westy. We are going to, it's just so important. His work is so important. And again, to have this, the medical skill and the social consciousness combined, it's just incredible. We're going to touch base with Stu Eber and Gloria Brandman. We're going to take a little musical interlude, and we'll be back with them and find out just how you can fight City Hall if you pay close attention. In the sky, dear Lord, in the sky. Well, back down here on Earth, we got to pay close attention. If destiny has meant that we retired and are still hanging around. I am honored to have Stu Eber, president of the Council at Municipal Retiree Organizations, and Gloria Brandman, retired special education teacher in the New York City Public Schools, who's a lifelong activist fighting for privatization of public education and promoting union member engagement within the UFT. Good morning, team.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you, Bob? How are you doing, Gloria?
Very good. It's early, but I made it up. Got up.
It makes three of us.
Okay, so we got to move fast. I got to raise some money at the with Catherine Davis. So I'm so happy to have as my co-pilot today. If you could tell me, Stu, there's been a lot of motion practice. You guys have made some gains here. When we last checked in this sad serial of Mayor de Blasio rushing out the door and then trying to change the way you get retirement health care benefits with socking people with $192 a month charge, where are we with this? Update people on your progress.
Okay, so where we were last time we spoke, the lawsuit has gone forward, and the judge has said that he's issued a temporary restraining order so that the plan, which was first supposed to go into effect July 1st, 2021, and then January 1st, 2022, the earliest that it can go into effect is April 1st, 2022. And in order for that to happen, the city and the alliance, which is the conglomeration of health insurance companies that are providing Medicare Advantage Plus plan, have to come.
AKA Evil Empire. Da, da, da.
Da, da, da. They chose the name, not us.
I know. I'm sorry.
That's fine. They have to go into court every 2 weeks starting January 7th and show the progress they've made to ameliorate all the problems that the courts, you know, agreed with the plaintiffs were created by the rollout, how they were doing their implementation of the plan, not the plan itself. Once the court is satisfied that all those problems have been eliminated, then the court will actually listen to the substance of the matter, which is how can, you know, is this proper? Is this legal? What the city and the unions through the Municipal Labor Committee have done, and in fact, as you said at the top of this segment, charge us $192 a month for the insurance that we've had ever since we've retired.
Wow,
and Gloria, that's a real core issue. Go ahead.
And I just wanted to, as Gloria, this notion of $192. And I know you're aware of it takes a lot of people to run a school, right? So we're dealing with DC 37 brothers and sisters that serve lunch, mm-hmm. that for whom, and even some older folks who may have retired back in the day, $192 is a lot and could really have an impact on people with a fixed income.
Yeah, I just want to clarify that if you would like to remain in the wonderful Medicare, primary Medicare insurance that we currently have, then we have to pay for it. If we want to switch to what many of us are unhappy about, this Medicare Advantage Plus plan, which we feel is inferior for a bunch of ways, which I won't go into now, then you don't pay it. But if you want the better insurance, then you do have to pay it per person. So for some people who might have a spouse or on their plan as well, then it's double that, $191 times two each month. And, yes, it comes out to thousands of dollars. And many, many people who would have to pay this can't afford it. Some of us, teachers, and our salaries were higher, and so now our pensions are higher. It's doable, but if this goes into play, it will create, and I didn't create this term, but it's a good one, a two-tier system, those that can't afford it and those that can. And who can't? Well, a lot of the workers are the lower workers are women and people of color, so we're going to have, a two-tier system. That is very unfair.
It's funny. The collective smarts that is in this group is just amazing, and the narrative has been impressive. Where, in some ways, you guys are kind of run up against the union leadership of your own unions, and if you can talk a little bit about the broader awareness, how does this issue connect into the issue of universal health care? It's been a steady theme through my work and through this program, even this morning. That there's a concern that the way that the mayor wants to take this, and even the MLC, doesn't really move towards the idea of Medicare for all. How does this increasing emphasis on privatization and these other channels undermine the broader project that you've been so supportive of the New York Health Act?
PNHP, who's been leading the charge along with Assemblyman Gottfried, who is retiring on us, but it's bless him, joining us as retirees.
Indeed.
They've been in the forefront of helping us and other organizations. And again, it is truly grassroots, because it's individuals from all sorts of various unions, retiree groups who come to the fore. In particular, I got to give credit to Marion Pizzatola, who organized the New York City, the NYC Organization of Public Service Retirees, and they're the ones who organized the lawsuit itself, and truly grassroots, using Facebook and other social media. I think they have approximately 10,000, if not more, people who are members and contributing to defray the cost of the lawsuit. So that's, one primary organization that did not exist until this happened. And then you have within various retiree organizations, people who, were active or weren't active and said, what is happening? And, try to find out. And they found out through their retiree chapters and or the unions itself and through the media. Thank you, Bob. Thank you, the chief. Thank you, Sam Mellons at New York Focus. And even the Daily News, which has printed, many, many letters, with, it's just rank and file people saying, oh, my God, look what's happening to me.
But I think I did want to also just, and that is so essential for people to be able to have the power to go forward. I do think I wanted to put it in a broader policy issue context about universal health care, because we're at such a trigger point now with this disease. But Gloria, could you tell me, we've spoken before about this connection between the universal health care and the New York Health Act.
I would say to start out that if the New York Health Act had passed, this wouldn't be an issue right now. It wouldn't even be happening. And many of us, as you said, have been working for that, and many of the groups that I work in, our bottom line, after we talk about why this is such a negative change for us, we end it by saying we need the New York Health Act and universal health care for everyone. And as you mentioned, many of the unions have been fighting against that from happening. My union is one. My union has not wanted to have it. They say it would not be good for us. We're better off now. And if there was going to be a change, it needs to happen from the at the federal level first. The national union needs to push for it. And I disagree. We can start locally. It's crucial that we do.
And I guess I just wonder, Stu, where do you see, is there an open question about how this is going to play out? Because we are having a transition with Mayor-elect Eric Adams. I saw that Mayor de Blasio and Mayor-elect Adams had a joint press appearance. Adams didn't take questions. Is there going to be some connection here that you're going to be looking towards maybe administrative relief from City Hall? Is there some chance of that? Have you gotten Has Mr. Adams, who himself is a retired police officer, spoken to this issue?
He did early on. He did early on and was the front page of the Daily News, where he, some headlines to the effect that this is a sick idea.
This is a bait and switch, to quote.
Right. He called it a bait and switch.
He did speak out. He suggested that he might not be in favor of this healthcare switch. But we shall see. He's also just appointed, I believe, Karen Ignacy, who is the president and chief executive officer of Emblem Health, to his health transition team. So,
would that be part of the evil empire, Gloria?
Well, I'm not sure. I am happy that someone such as yourself is on his transition team. But we're hoping for the best, and we're actually, I might give a quick plug right now.
Please do.
We are actually going to be wishing Mayor-elect Adams a happy and healthy new year on Tuesday at 12 noon in front of Brooklyn Borough Hall. And this event is organized by a group called the Cross Union Retiree Organizing Committee, also known as CROC, and we're made up of rank and file members of a variety of city unions. And we will be there telling him, we want you to have a healthy, happy new year, and we want one too. And the way we can have one is if you do not let this switch get through. So we're hoping people will come. We will be reading testimonies to him. We hope he will join us. We will be dressed in our New Year's Eve best in anticipation. And, again, 12 noon, Brooklyn Borough Hall. Please join us. So we're hoping he can be swayed. We haven't given up on him.
Well, and that's good. Stu, if you can give people
on the same subject, if people who are listening want to contact the organization that's organized this, their email address is retireesquestions, all lowercase, at gmail.com. So, and again, this is an organization that grew truly grassroots. It didn't exist before, March or April of this year. And they've been also in the forefront. And again, as Gloria said, there's a rally tomorrow in front of Borough Hall to wish our incoming mayor a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year and a happy and healthy New Year.
Well, and I also just want to thank you guys so much for keeping us updated. We really want to have you guys back in the new year. It's just so essential for people to come together like you have. I mean, one of the things that you may not be able to beat City Hall, but you can have an impact on the timeline.
right? And again, the court, you know, the court recognized what an imposition this very poorly planned out rollout was. And again, you know, again, as Gloria said, there are, you know, people on the retiree spectrum all across political views and on New York Health Act, et cetera. But what everyone is unified on is that we were slapped in the face.
Well, you woke up. Gloria, I want to give you a chance to give your coordinates out. You've got so much going on. How can people get in contact with you and your groups?
Well, thank you, Stu, for giving our email, which again is our email is for Croc is retireequestions@gmail.com. I'm not sure what the email was that you gave out, but it's retireequestions@gmail.com, and that's for the Cross Union Retiree Organizing Committee. That is what we're talking about today. I'm in other groups as well, but we are sponsoring this event tomorrow. And also, I just wanted to add that the court case, which was a temporary victory, and it's going to allow people to opt into it, try it out, and then opt out if they don't like it through the end of June. But that's just the beginning. I believe they have some more tricks up their sleeve. The court case is not over. Once the temporary injunction is lifted, there will be more challenges, legal challenges going on. So we look forward to it.
Unfortunately, I'm up against the clock. We've got to raise some money to keep the power of tower going so we can actually do this every day. Thank you so much, guys. We'll talk to you in the new year. All the best.
Thank you.
Stay
healthy, stay everyone.
Well.
Thanks. That's Stu Eber, okay. President of Council of Municipal Retiree Organizations, and Gloria Bradman, retired special education teacher and activist.
The song is known all around the world now.
There once was a union maid. She never was afraid of the greens and the geeks and the company kinks and the deputy sheriff that made the raid to the union hall when a meeting it was called. When the legion boys come around, she always stood her ground.
Oh, you can't scare me. I'm sticking to the union. I'm sticking to the union. I'm sticking to the union.
Yeah, we're sticking with the union. And speaking of solidarity, we really need you to call 212-209-2950 and contribute in the name of this show or any other. I'm joined by Catherine Davis, whose voice I so love to hear on the radio. Over the years, when I have been bummed out, I hear her voice and I get my center. Good morning, Catherine. We haven't spoken yet during this whole drive.
No, we have not. And good morning. And I have to say, I have enjoyed your work. You have a history, and I actually like your written journalism. I've been sharing your articles on my Facebook pages, and you always get under the cover, as it were, you know, and really can give a deep story. And I want people to support not only this radio station but this program, and the best way to do that is to keep the tower going, to make sure.
Yeah, and I guess the thing here is that people, we have had a moment of kind of stabilization. We have the ability to look ahead now and to, as you know, in your life, when you can pay a big bill in advance, you've got leverage in the world. And we need that support now. It's some $17,000 a month in terms of transmitter rent, which is down considerably from what it used to be at the Empire State Building. Still, as I say, the rent is too damn high, but we've got to pay it. I would love to take listener calls. I know Catherine does too. But we really couldn't today because it was an important news day. You needed to hear this stuff from the front lines about what working people are experiencing during the pandemic. And I got to say, you're not hearing that on corporate news. This is directly from the people doing the work, like yourselves. So we have to support this. It's kind of a barn raising. Please call 212-209-2950. So Catherine, what do you think? Are people surprised it costs so much for that tower?
Well, perhaps our new listeners are, the old ones know what we used to pay. But I won't say old ones, but the deep family, the family that's been with us for years and generations. But, you know, hey, we've just gone through a terrible time with the COVID mess that's been going on out in the world, and people have not had and not been able to get to their resources and build their resources necessarily. But what's so important is that WBAI is one of the greatest resources, not just in New York, but in the country.
So true.
We do not have any media in this country any longer that is completely listener supported, completely listener enjoyed. I mean, we need you, you need us, and we're the only ones who can bring you the real story, where each producer can investigate the truth and bring it to you. Without the censorship that we see on mainstream media.
And that's so true. And the other thing, too, is access to the airwaves. One of the things that's happened over my lifetime as a journalist is that with the deregulation of the airwaves, you know, this airwaves were turned into a property right, the likes of Fox News. And as a consequence, things like access to public, you know, the airwaves belong to the public. And they're supposed to be licensed as a privilege by the corporations. But what's happened is, like I said, they've turned it into a property right. And so it's important that we have this tower of power. I like the King Downing's turn of a phrase, this tower of power. This is your power, but it only works if you support it. So please call 212-209-2950. I have some copies of my book, Stuck Nation, Can the United States Change Course on Our History of Choosing Profits Over People? I have a few free copies. I will personally mail them to you. If you contribute $100, if I get those addresses through the station, do what you can. We're going to sign off for now. Be tuned to turn into the space tomorrow for Frenchie Davis. And, of course, Democracy Now! Is up next. Thanks, Catherine.
You're very welcome. Thank you. And you've been listening to Robert Henley, and this is an amazing program that comes to you, part of the new lineup. We need for you to support that. So please do support that by calling 212-209-2950. You can make that pledge of support in favor of the program itself, or you can make that phone call, 212-209-2950. Tell them you want to donate to the Tower Fund. You can also go to the website, give to WBAI.org, and write. You can go there and make your donation. You can go to our main website, WBAI.org, and you can make that tower donation. So however is most convenient, whatever way is most convenient.
And also, I will make sure to send you this Stuck Nation, the five folks that call in. Stuck Nation, Can the United States Change Course on Our History of Choosing Profits Over People, brought out by Democracy at Work, with a great foreword by Professor Rick Wolf.
Ooh, I want one of those. Okay, that is amazing. That is amazing. Thank you so much for making that offer. And those of you who are in the know, do realize that you can get this directly from Robert Henley, the host. So he's the one. He's going to send it to you. We're going to reach out to the radio station and make sure we get your info, and you'll get your book. If you can make that $100 donation, you can become a WBAI buddy in the name of the show.
I'll even autograph it.
Ooh.
Illusions of grandeur.
No, really, for those people who enjoy your work, that would be very, very valuable, because, like I said, I love your show, but I really love your writing as well. you do amazing articles, so I look forward to being able to read that book. So call that phone number, 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950, and I guess we'll make way for Democracy Now! Coming up in just a moment. And I want to thank you so much, Robert Henley, for inviting me to pitch with you. I loved it.
Oh, it's wonderful. I love you too. Take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Did you hear? Stand up for your right.
And we're asking you to stand up for our tower. This tower fund will really get us through the new year. 212-209-2950.
You get up, you stand up. Don't give up the fight. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. You get up, stand up.
Tune in to WBAI Saturday, December 25th, Christmas evening at 8 p.m. to hear two wonderful radio musicals, A Country Christmas Carol and Top of the Heap. These two delightful features will keep you entertained as you wind down from whatever you did on Christmas Day. And since you don't have to watch a screen, you can focus your gaze on the remains of a delicious Christmas dinner and a floor full of crumpled wrapping paper. Remember, 8 p.m. December 25th for the WBAI Playhouse.
My name is Dan Ingram, and I'm a WBAI fan. They've always been, you know, the station that kicked butt and the station that said what you're not supposed to say because the people in power don't want to hear it. And I love that.
I have to celebrate you, baby.
Hello, this is Dr. Michio Kaku, host of Exploration, which reports on the impact of science on society, which is usually heard every Wednesday evening. First of all, Exploration is moving. That's right. From now on, it'll be broadcast on Saturdays at noon. So write that down. Mark that down on your calendar. Our time slot has been moved to Saturdays at noontime. Second, let me emphasize the importance of supporting WBAI with whatever you can afford. One way is to become a WBAI buddy, a sustaining member in the name of Exploration for $10, $15 or more a month by calling 212-209-2950. Now, write that number down. It's 212-209-2950. 2950. Now, another way is to go to our website, WBAI.org. Click on to the WBAI button on the upper right-hand corner of the website. So please now, call 212-209-2950 or go to WBAI.org and make that pledge for social change.
You can make that phone call right now, 212-209-2950, to make a pledge of support to WBAI, or you can go to the website, give2wbai.org, and the donation site, is what I just gave you, and our regular site is wbai.org. Show your support.